Hello, and welcome to
Extra Grimm,
the show within a show where we delve a little deeper into the world of the Brothers Grimm. This episode, we will be revealing the winner of our competition and read out some of your wonderful messages. Now, we had so many lovely messages come through that we couldn't cover them all in this episode. So if you don't hear your message in the next half hour, fear not. We shall be continuing to read them out over subsequent episodes of Grimm Reading. But back to this episode. We're also going to be reading one of the Grimm's deleted stories and explore why some of these stories were erased by the brothers. And to finish this delicious treat of an episode, we'll be giving our review of the Brothers Grimm movie. So, pop another log on the fire, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Extra Grimm.
Let's
bring the competition to a close, shall we, Adam?
As you heard in the last episode, the competition is indeed closed.
We've had loads of entries. Surprisingly, we've had too many to read out, which I was not expecting when it started. So we'd like to share a few messages we've got. We've selected a couple that we're going to read out.
We have, but we just want to say before we start that everyone we got was lovely.
Everyone we got was like a tiny little morsel of joy.
A tiny morsel.
Fueling our hearts.
Fueling our hearts.
Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that.
Me neither.
So thank you so much to everyone who's got involved in the competition. And we're going to reveal the winner in this episode. But first, we're going to read out a few of the lovely messages we've received.
So without further ado, we've got this wonderful email from Victoria Young. Once upon a time, a beautiful maiden living in a fair kingdom fell into misfortune. No, her father didn't want her to marry a cannibal or spin straw into gold. No, she was given an assignment, which had to do with, dare I say it, analysing literature.
That's way worse than marrying a cannibal.
Way worse. However, the maiden soon found that the literature contained allusions to some rather famous stories. Did a quick Google search, including terms like paper dress and strawberries, and realised what tale the literature was referring to. It's the Three Little Men in the Woods by the Brothers Grimm.
Of course it is.
Not having time to open her special edition gold leaf tome of Grimm stories and legends, she searched for and located another format of reading the story. And such goes the tale of how I, Victoria, discovered your positively delightful and sometimes positively gruesome podcast. Oh. And oh, how I adore it.
Oh, Victoria.
That's lovely. Though I only discovered Grimm Reading.
She asked you to do that, didn't she?
On Monday, every spare moment since then has been filled with tales of love and deceit, marriage and bloodshed, happiness and cannibalism. My favourite so far is honestly probably where it all began. The Three Little Men in the Woods. Excellent choice, one of my favourites.
Yeah, definitely.
It's such a ridiculous story, yet so classic. Thanks for creating a podcast that is so magical, yet hilarious at the same time. What's a lovely message.
What an absolutely lovely message. And we are very happy to help you with your homework. And excellent choice.
So the next message is from Charles Hargrove, who says, it has to be The Pink. I enjoy the Brothers Grimm for their barely concealed strain of absolute insanity. And Fire Breathing Poodle was the first bit in the story so far that made me laugh out loud in sheer stupefaction. This is my 10-year-old daughter's favourite podcast.
Aww.
She is a big Grimm fan.
Aww.
That's lovely.
That's amazing.
She was already familiar with all the stories until we got to The Pink. We are always looking forward to more. And I would once again like to recommend The Strange Feast for sheer mind-blowing madness. Now, Charles had mentioned that to us in an earlier email, hadn't he?
Okay, well, we'll get back to you on that, Charles, shortly.
You'll be hearing from us. Matt and I were both very touched by that message, Charles. So glad that your daughter is enjoying the podcast. Big shout out to her.
And she obviously knows her stuff. She knows all the stories so far, until The Pink.
Almost certainly she knows a lot more than we do.
Without a doubt.
Now, we've got this message come through from Owen, and I'm going to start reading it in an accent and probably drop it very quickly.
I can't wait for this.
G'day from Australia.
Oh, dear.
And that's going to be the extent of that accent. I'm going to slip back into my English accent. So sorry.
Owen led you down that path, I think. It's Owen's fault.
I mean, you can't give us that opening and not expect me to put on a terrible, terrible accent. My favourite episode of Grimm Reading is the Knapsack, the Hat and the Horn.
That's unexpected.
It is unexpected.
That was not one I thought anyone would vote for. Well, let's hear why Owen likes it so much. So I'm just having... I'm coming from Love Heart.
Love Hearts. I'm having a Love Heart too. This one says, hold me.
It's sort of been Valentine's Day fairly recently, and in the UK we have these little sweets called Love Hearts. They're little pure sugary treats, and each one has a little message on it, a little Valentine's message. And I'll tell you what, I'll let you know. I'll eat one per message.
Other sherbetty treats are available.
So why does Owen like the knapsack?
I like this episode the most because of its morals. I think the underlying message in the story is that blind ambition, or greed perhaps, is dangerous. And also that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. The main character starts out seeming like a good person. After he finds his magic tablecloth, he continues to be good, offering dinner to the poor man he meets. However, once he sees that the man has things he wants, he starts doing really devious things to get more and more. By the end of the story, he has become the king, but also has destroyed his kingdom.
That's
beautifully put.
Brilliant, yeah. I was really surprised by these votes for the knapsack, the hat and the horn. Yeah. People really found a lot in it to sink their teeth into.
It's quite a rich story.
Yeah, and it ends with like the apocalypse. So it's
pretty, it's pretty epic in scale.
It starts with a fancy picnic table and ends with the apocalypse. Bad boy. That's what my Love Heart says. I'm going to have that now.
So we got this message from Kitty Kong. My favourite was from the extra episode from the listener poll, even though it was a Norwegian tale, The Fleeing Pancake.
The Fleeing Pancake!
I'm really glad you picked that, because that's actually one of my favourites. I think
same,
both of ours.
Definitely.
It's such a great story. The way you both read and reacted had me in stitches. I was laughing so hard.
Good day, Pancake. That was so, like, honestly, we...
Excellent. I loved that story.
I hadn't even read it. Like, Adam just picked a random story. Yeah. So we hadn't even prepared for that. And it was just one of the best without any preparation.
I love that story.
That was great. And,
so excellent choice there by Kitty.
Kitty has also said, she sent us a message a long time ago, right at the beginning. She's a big fan of Brothers Grimm. And she said her favourite story from the Brothers Grimm is Clever Gretel, or Gretel. So she's desperate to hear that. She also said she loves The Fisherman and His Wife and The Goose Girl. But basically, I've always wanted to tell you, and I always forget. So thank you, Kitty. I've told Adam now. So it's down to him.
Right, pressure's on to me to pick what you've suggested.
Yes.
I mean, those are some good suggestions. So,
yes. First love.
First love.
That's what my other love heart says.
So Rihanna says, I've had so many laughs and received so many strange looks when enjoying the tales and the brilliant running commentary on the Grimm stories. I'd have to say that my favourite story so far has to be Godfather Death.
Yes,
for no other reason, I love the justification and ballsiness to deny both God and the devil as Godfather and choose death for his fairness.
Godfather Death is perhaps the only one we've actually disagreed on, I think. Thanks for backing me up there, Rihanna. I agree with everything you said.
So it's... you're on Matt's side with that one. I mean, looking back, that's... Oh. It is a good story.
Oh, hello, okay.
Maybe not as good as Matt says, but...
Epic.
Epic.
That's my next love heart.
Caitlin says, first of all, I'd like to extend a very warm congratulations on this incredible collaboration. Prior to this episode, I had not heard of Poop Press, and I am now quite obsessed. Poop Press obviously being the wonderful sponsors, if you like, of this competition. In terms of my favourite episode, I'd have to say it would be none other than old Crookshanks himself, Rumpelstiltskin. This is actually my favourite fairy tale in general. It was the first one I'd learnt about as a fairy tale rather than a Disney movie. I also love the character of Rumpelstiltskin, who embodies that which is neither inherently good or bad.
That was the first famous one we did, apart from maybe the Bremen Town Musicians.
Oh, but it's bigger than that.
It's true.
It's a big boy.
It's one of the only ones that hasn't had a sort of Disney treatment out of the famous ones.
It's only a matter of time, though, isn't it?
Sugar Lips.
Oh, Sugar Lips again. So Dawn says... Hi, Matt and Andy.
Oh, hello, Dawn. How's it going? How's it going? Oh, that's nice of you, Dawn. Hello back to you. Right back to you there.
Here is my entry to win the wonderful Poop Press edition of the Grimm's Tales. In third place, the Christmas special.
Oh, okay.
The port brought an extra dimension to that episode. And the Absjonsson and Mo tale of the trolls is a childhood favourite of mine. So you already knew that story, which is great.
Brilliant, yeah. I've since been reading a collection of Absjonsson and Mo tales, so I'm now familiar with them.
So in second place, the Three Snakelys.
Oh,
interesting choice.
In
now that's one that surprises me. In joint first place, I mean, You're taking some liberties here, Dawn. Pretending you're giving us three, this is really four, isn't it? Really?
When it should be one.
In joint first place, as I just love murder mysteries, are The Robber Bridegroom and The Singing Bones. I'd never seen them in the context of a murder mystery before, instead as tales that teach social mores. But of course, that's what all murder mysteries do. Highlight our social mores and allow us to be removed from the reality of them within a fictional narrative. Anyway, toodle-pip, I'm looking forward to listening to more Green Reading this year. Best wishes, Dawn.
Yes
is what Matt says to that with his love heart.
That's what my love heart says, Dawn.
To be fair to Dawn, there is a PS. Where the heck did I get Andy from? I meant Adam, obviously. I have to blame that one on autocorrect, if of course you believe in fairy tales, that is.
Oh, a little twist there at the end.
Do I believe?
You do. Grim Reading Podcast, you do.
I believe. You're off the hook, Dawn. That was a lovely message. Thank you so much. So the last message we're going to read out from Sue Hancocks says, "Hi Matt and Adam. Listening to The Wolf and the Seven Little Kids transported me back to the 80s when I bought a collection of storybooks to read to my children. These were part of the Read Me a Story series sold at Sainsbury's supermarket." That's the supermarket we have in the UK. "Money was extremely tight and I could only afford to buy one book a fortnight, so they were very precious to me. I read them to each of my three children at bedtime over the years from about age 5. Hopefully, I've not damaged my little darlings too much.
I'm sure you haven't.
My daughter has asked I pass them on to her to read to her son." That's lovely. "And my eldest son went on to be a teacher and host of Totalus Rankium." "I've listened to 15 episodes so far in 3 days. I mean, I hope you're okay. Keep up the good work, guys. I absolutely love the podcast. Regards, Sue Hancocks." Oh, that's fantastic.
That is amazing. Thank you, Sue.
So that is the dear mother of Rob of from Rob. Totalus Rankium fame.
Yeah. Another podcast from the Rexy Pod fam.
Absolutely.
Italy. Totalus played an advert for Grim Reading Podcast on their latest Roman Emperors episode.
They did.
We mentioned them in the Christmas episode as well. We gave them a shout out. And clearly our advert worked because the hosts of Totalus Rankium's mum found us and is binging Grim Reading. So
we're very happy to have her on board.
Welcome aboard.
Yes.
Thank you, Sue. Say yes.
Say yes. I'm not sure about that love heart.
That's a strange one. Unfortunately, my final love heart is a sad, crying face.
Oh.
I didn't even know they had little sort of emoji love hearts.
Is that because we've come to the end of the messages?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad. So, that leaves us naturally on to picking the winner of the competition. Now, the standard of entries was so high, so consistently high, as you heard just there, that Matt and I were having real trouble picking the best. I mean, we couldn't do it.
It was impossible.
It was basically impossible. We've given ourselves an impossible task. So what we've decided to do is to put everyone's names in a hat, or in this case, a bowl, which I've got right here, and give that a little shuffle, and we'll pick out the winner at random. So, I mean, I'm feeling very tense right now. I can't
Me
wait
too.
To
I'm
find
really
out who's
tense.
Won.
But at least if you haven't won, it's not our fault. Don't be annoyed.
So essentially what we're doing here is to absolve us of any responsibility by putting you in the hands of random chance.
Genuinely, every message was just...
It really was.
It's just ridiculously nice to receive. So
we have the best listeners, so thank you so much. I don't know if you'll hear it on the mic here, but mixing it up, making it fair.
All right, and the winner...
Oh...
is Dawn Nelson.
Hey, Dawn.
Whose favourite story was The Robber Bridegroom and the Singing Bone.
Once we get in touch and sort out the details, you have a lovely Grim Reading book winging its way to you.
That book will be winging its way over to you before you know it.
It's a magical book.
Thanks very much from both from me and Andy. Read out earlier from Charles Hargrove, and Charles said, "I would once again like to recommend The Strange Feast for the sheer mind-blowing madness." Do you remember?
I do remember. And he said once again.
Well,
Charles was our first ever emailer that we ever got.
Oh, he was indeed.
Way back in 2018. we were featured on Rex Factor podcast. They gave us a shout out, which was amazing, in their finale of the second series. We've mentioned them before, Rex Factor. We are proud members of the Rexy Pod family.
Very proud members.
Who inspired us to do what we do. And after we got a shout out on their podcast, we received an email and we were both very excited.
Yes, indeed.
First one from Charles, and he said, I was led to your podcast by Rex Factor and I'm anxious to dive in. Well, he clearly has, along with his daughter, and we're thrilled to have you both as listeners.
He dove in.
He dove right in there.
He dove in.
We do struggle with past participles on this show. It comes up an awful lot.
He dovened.
Charles continued to say, I was just wondering when you were going to get to the hands-down freakiest Grimm story, The Strange Feast.
Mm-hmm.
I try and tell people about this story, and they think that I'm making it up.
That makes me very, very, very intrigued.
Well, then, you and Charles will be pleased to hear that we are now going to read The Strange Feast.
Oh, I can't wait.
Just keep in mind, hands down, freakiest Grimm story.
Mm-hmm.
These are Charles's words.
Big words,
People
Charles.
Think I'm making it up, he also says.
Charles, you have piqued my interest. I just hope you're not going to let me down.
Should we dive in?
Let's do it.
Let's dove.
The Strange Feast.
A blood sausage.
That's already too much for Adam.
It's off to a great start.
Those are the best three words for opening anything in the English language.
Can you think of a better way to start a story than a blood sausage?
A blood sausage and a liver sausage
had been
friends for some time.
Oh.
And the blood sausage invited the liver sausage for a meal at her home. At dinner time, the liver sausage merrily set out for the blood sausage's house. But when she walked through the doorway, she saw all kinds of strange things. There were many steps, and on each of them she found something different. A broom and shovel were fighting with each other. And there was a monkey with a big wound on his head. And more such things.
This is already possibly the greatest story I've ever heard. She just walks in on a scene unfolding.
Yeah.
Broom and a shovel, having a tussle. Monkey with a wound on his head. Just sat on different steps.
And more such things.
Obviously, that kind of thing, but just more of
that sort of thing. Monkey with a wound, broom and shovel fighting.
That sort of thing. You know the ones.
The liver sausage was very frightened and upset by this.
I can imagine.
Nevertheless, she took heart and entered the room and was welcomed in a friendly way by the blood sausage. The liver sausage began to inquire about the strange things on the stairs, but the blood sausage pretended not to hear her, or made it seem as if it was not worth talking about. Or she said something about the shovel and the broom, such as, oh, that was probably my maid gossiping with someone on the stairs.
What?
And she shifted the topic to something else.
I would be amazed if I could shift the topic away from a broom and a shovel fighting in it.
Adam, I was just coming up to your flat and...
Yeah, don't worry, but that's probably just some weird trick of the light.
There was a monkey with a wound on his head, Adam.
You couldn't do it. How can you shift the topic from that?
Oh, he's my maid, probably. She's very hairy. Then the blood sausage said she had to leave the room to go into the kitchen and look after the meal, because they're having a meal together.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to check to see that everything was in order and nothing had fallen into the ashes. The liver sausage began walking back and forth in the room and kept wondering about the strange things until someone appeared. Mm-hmm. I don't know who it was, and said... That's what it says in the story.
The storyteller doesn't even know who it was.
And said, let me warn you, liver sausage. You are in a bloody murderous trap. You'd better get out of here if you value your life. The liver sausage didn't have to think twice about this. She ran out of the door as fast as she could, nor did she stop until she got out of the house and was in the middle of the street. So she's like panting.
Got away from the house.
She looks around and saw the blood sausage standing high up in the attic window with a long, long knife that was gleaming as though it had just been sharpened.
Way.
The blood sausage threatened her with it and cried out, if I had caught you, I would have had you. The end.
What has just happened? Charles, you were not wrong. That story is insane.
I was worried about reading it because it's so mental that nothing will ever seem too bizarre, too surreal, too freaky after that story, The Strange Feast.
Something that's incredible is that with all the strange things unfolding, by the time you get sort of halfway through the story, you're totally accepting the fact that the main two characters are a blood sausage and a liver sausage. That bit doesn't seem weird anymore because you found a monkey with a weed on its head, sat on the stairs.
So blood sausage. These are weird. That's a weird main character.
Blood sausage, a bit like a black pudding sort of thing.
Yeah, a blood sausage is a black pudding.
If for those in the UK, yeah.
Liver sausage, I wasn't so sure about.
Like a pate, I sort of think.
Well, I looked it up, and liver sausages are quite common in certain parts of Europe.
Okay.
And actually, in the UK, you can buy Sainsbury's liver sausage slices, £1 for a pack of 10.
Oh, not bad value.
So Sue got her fairy tale books from Sainsbury's.
She did indeed.
For Rob and siblings. And apparently Sainsbury's also provide liver sausage slices. So for Sainsbury's, I think they've got a little love of fairy tales in there.
And if you're looking for one shop to sort what you need, Sainsbury's it is. Pop in for a lovely fairy tale book and some sliced liver sausage.
So liver sausages are a thing. And you can even get some here. Yeah.
So they're good friends. And...
Yeah. Yeah.
Been friends for a long time. So how long has the blood sausage been plotting that? That's terrible.
Oh, it's awful. Betrayal. Monkey with a wound on its head.
Yeah, so what's that all about? Why is it there? And why did it have a wound on its head? Did it survive an attack by the blood sausage? And what's it doing? Is it just sat there?
Yeah.
Is it just bleeding out?
A broom and a shovel fighting.
Fighting. That's never explained.
Yeah! Yeah! And the liver sausage is like, oh, sorry, don't mind me. I'm just heading up there.
I'm just going to get past you.
Yeah!
Monkey just looks at her as she goes past.
Oh, my God.
Probably got a severe concussion. It's clearly part of something nefarious because the blood sausage doesn't want her to talk about it.
It's all very odd. I mean... My first thought is, there's nothing in there. There's no moral. There's no. It's not even really a story.
No.
It's just. It reminded me of a nightmare. So I felt like maybe one of the brothers just like woke up in the night screaming like, ah! And Jacob was like, what? What happened, Wilhelm? I was like, oh, there's a sausage. And then a monkey, the wound. And they're like, this is gold. I'm writing this down. And they wrote it down.
Hence, they don't know who the person who came in was because you can't quite. Yeah,
exactly. Like, I don't know who that was. What else was that? If that wasn't just a nightmare, fever dream.
I mean, other than that, it makes no sense whatsoever.
What, did you enjoy it, though?
I loved it.
I mean, I think you're on record as saying that's the best story ever told. It's something like that.
Something along those lines. I mean, eat your heart out, Harry Potter.
Well, we haven't really come across that story before, have we,
no.
Adam, in our podcast, in our list. You perhaps may not have even noticed it, really.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would be because it's buried right at the bottom of our list under the section of erased stories.
Mm-hmm.
So this story is not an official Brothers Grimm tale anymore.
So they basically deleted it, scrubbed it from...
They expunged it from the record.
Yeah.
This is an area of the Grimm's fairy tales that we haven't really explored. So if you will indulge me, can I give you a very brief introduction to the world of deleted stories?
Please do, I'd love to know.
So, by my very rough calculations, I've had to kind of work it out myself. The Brothers Grimm erased around 38 stories in total, which is quite a hefty number.
A lot of work to just put to one side.
Most of these were expunged after the first edition.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, there are 7 editions of the story.
I remember, yeah.
And the biggest cull came after the first edition.
Right.
But why did they do this? Why did they delete some of their stories? It's hard to give a definitive answer, but... If we consider the original purpose of their fairy tale book, it might shed a little light on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, over 7 revised editions of their books, as well as deleting stories and adding new ones, the Brothers Grimm also embellished their fairy tales. We've noticed before that the first version of the story is often more streamlined and straight to the point. You know, we often compare the first version. It's much more punchy and less detailed.
Yeah.
If you hark back to our first ever Extra Grimm episode, where we looked at translations, you'll remember that the original purpose of collecting these stories was based in romantic notions of capturing the voice of the German-speaking people.
Yeah.
At the time the Brothers Grimm were around and working, there was no such thing as Germany. There was just a loose collection of states known as the Holy Roman Empire, We'll go into that another time. I'd really like to look into the context. But just keep that in mind now, there's no Germany. So the Brothers Grimm amassed a wealth of stories from this region, and they edited them into their Book of Fairy Tales, which was first published in 1812. And more than any other version of the book, this first ever version in 1812 was in keeping with their original vision of capturing what they called the natural poetry, or Naturpoesie, that's definitely how you pronounce it.
Oh, definitely.
Of the people. They wanted to record the natural poetry before it became extinct. They believed it was dying out. Also as protest against French occupation, because I haven't mentioned that Napoleon had invaded.
Oh, great.
Good old Napoleon. He'd invaded, and so it was in protest against French occupation and to unite German-speaking people into one nation under the threat of this foreign invasion. I found a marvellous quote from Wilhelm Grimm, which illuminates how he saw German folktales. He referred to them as coloured glass pieces, scattered fragments of the once whole diamond of divinely inspired poetry. That is a turn of phrase.
That is beautiful.
So he says there was this once complete diamond and it's shattered, but folk tales are a little coloured piece of the glass of the once whole diamond.
Now, got a small bone to pick with him there. If you shatter a diamond, you don't get glass. You get smaller pieces of diamond. You've got to be precise with these things. Don't get glass from diamond.
When I was researching this, that stopped me in my tracks, that quote. I thought that was magical. Adam's not so impressed.
No, it's beautiful. I mean,
let me point something out to you there, Wilhelm.
It's beautiful. Just got to get the just details right.
You've got to get it right, or the whole thing unravels.
Yeah, exactly.
However, despite his beautiful and incorrect quote, out of the two brothers, it was Wilhelm who couldn't resist making the stories more artistic and Christian-friendly. They began to clean up and even remove some of the unsavory stories as their fairy tales began to appeal to a wider middle-class audience and to children. For example, Hansel and Gretel. If you remember, originally it was the mother and the father who abandoned the kids.
Yeah.
But the one we read, the final version, the mother has been turned to a stepmother because motherhood is sacred and they don't want to sort of show mothers in a bad light to their children.
But stepmothers, they're fair game.
That's fine. So basically it went from being a mass academic ideological exercise to being a best-selling kids book.
And that's just how fame corrupts.
And so stories like The Strange Feast had to go. However, it was only very, very recently that the English-speaking world discovered the delights of this first version. Jack Sipes is an American professor and an authority on the Grimms, and he took it into his own hands to translate this first edition of the Brothers Grimm fairy tales. On the changes that the brothers made, he's quoted as saying, "Although they did not abandon their basic notions about the pure origins and significance of folk tales, there are significant indications that they had been influenced by their critics to make the tales more accessible to a general public and more considerate of children." So basically, they've sort of been criticised for being too dark, too violent, too weird. So it wasn't until the 21st century that this first version was available in English. Essentially, a lot of those erased stories, you couldn't get them in English until 2014.
Wow, that's amazing.
Even though the Brothers Grimm Fairy Tales is up there with like the Bible and the Quran as the most sold book in the world.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be.
So this is a major reason why some of the stories were deleted. Some were chucked because they were too gruesome, including how some children played at slaughtering and the starving children. No prizes for guessing what happens in that one. Some were deleted because they weren't considered German enough, especially if they were French. So Puss in Boots was in the original one, Bluebeard, which is like the Robber Bridegroom. There's one called Ocolo, which I read. It's about some cannibals. Nuts. They were all considered too French. Also, I don't know if I trust this source, but someone said there's a story called The Faithful Animals, which was considered too Mongolian. It's from Mongolian folklore.
Do you know what winds me up, Matt? When a story is just a little bit too Mongolian.
Oh, don't get me started.
Oh, I'm sick of it.
Or some were merged with others as they started to get new accounts from different parts of Germany. So, for example, the story Good Bowling and Card Playing got embellished and changed and became the story of the youth who went forth to learn what fear is. But for most of them, we'll never know why the Brothers Grimm decided to erase them and, by their own logic, remove a coloured fragment of German folk history. Finally, at the end of last week's episode, we stuck the Brothers Grimm movie in the Castle DVD player.
We did indeed.
And we gave it a little watch, didn't we?
We did, the
Brothers
indeed.
Grimm movie. I, with foresight, jotted down some notes. Adam didn't. So I'd like Adam to kick things off. I want to see what, from the top of your head, tell me about the Brothers Grimm movie.
Okay. From memory, Will and Jake.
Damon and Ledger.
Damon and Ledger. Will and Jake, brothers. Will was sort of... thinks himself a bit of a Lothario, very confident man. Jake can't quite get a handle on him. He's just weird. He's just weird.
And he just constantly made weird sounds, like, yeah. Like a little puppy. Yes. It was bizarre. It was non-stop.
Germany's occupied by a stupid French general bloke.
Yeah, Jonathan Price.
He has got an Italian bloke working for him. Who tortures people. That's not really explained why, he just does.
Yeah, he likes it.
He loves it. For some reason, he's there, and they go to a town to... kids will keep going missing.
Are you going to try and remember the plot? I don't think the writers knew the plot.
No, I don't think anyone knew the plot. From beginning to right through post-production to selling the DVD, I don't think anyone at any point in that chain knew what on earth was going on.
So I think what Adam's getting at here is, it's kind of like a fun Hollywood movie, but it... has the most surreal, bizarre moments. So would you like to hear my notes? This might jog your memory for a few things.
Yeah. I seem to remember trees kept running away. That was weird.
A lot of geese that kept running
there
everywhere.
There were a lot of geese.
And we watched the sort of making of, and they kept talking about the geese. I think Terry Gilliam, the director, loved them. Oh, I've written here, Brothers Graham. I don't know what that is.
Brothers Graham. Someone at one point says Brothers Graham, I'm sure.
Brothers Graham. I've written accents.
Yeah, I mean, the accents were...
Hello, Governor.
It's interesting, isn't it, when an American plays someone on continental Europe, maybe a German, maybe a French person, they put on an English accent.
It's like if any American show is set in ancient Rome, they all sound like Englishmen. Like,
yes, as what? Famously they did in ancient Rome.
It's a good rule. It's like a bridge between America and the rest of Europe.
Yeah.
Just an English
pick somewhere
accent.
In between. England, that would do.
I've written here, trust the toad.
I think Matt Damon says, trust the toad. Yeah. And Heath Ledger gives him the best look you've ever seen in your life. He leans entirely to one side and gives him the most withering look. Like, what are you talking about?
It was definite in meme territory.
There should be a gif of that everywhere on the internet. It was amazing.
So there's this weird scene where a horse swallows a child. A horse sort of spits like spider webs on a child.
On a child and then
drags it in. Then the horse runs into the forest with a ginormous bulging belly because it's eating a child. It was literally insane. It was certifiably insane.
Yeah.
That this movie was just completely nuts. I didn't have a clue what was going on at any point.
Yep.
Most important part here, Adam.
I think you're going to talk about the bit at the end, don't you?
No, first of all, get ready. This is going to... I can't believe you haven't remembered this. I've written here... Slipper the goldfish.
I'd forgotten about that. There's a fearless woman from the village who...
Lena Headey.
He's having none of the Grimm's nonsense. And I think Matt Damon's character, Will, quite likes her. And he is sharing with his brother that he plans later to slip her the goldfish.
It was irrelevant. He just said something like, not sure I trust her, but I'd slip her the goldfish.
Yeah.
And we were like, whoa.
Yeah, whoa. We rewound that. Did he just say that? Yeah, he did.
Did he say slip her the goldfish?
He did.
Now, me and Adam are Brits, and I don't know if they thought that was a British term or an expression.
It's not.
And to be honest, the only thing we thought that could possibly mean is very filthy and rude.
Mm-hmm.
I'd slip her the goldfish.
And in fact, if you look at it online, the only reference you can find to that phrase is quoting the film.
So what does it mean?
Writer wrote that for that film.
Now, the main part of bulk of my notes on the film here is what you were thinking of.
The amazing scene at the end.
This is what I jotted down. So this is the climactic scene.
The pinnacle of the film.
So basically, I just want to set the scene for you. There's a huge tower, like a Rapunzel-type tower. They're trying to get in the top. Jake is sitting in a little catapult. Meanwhile, Will is slight on a ledge by the tower.
Partway up the tower.
Fighting the French general. So that's the setup.
Yes.
So this is how the scene unfolds. You know, the French general's got him pinned down on the floor. Will gets a flaming crucifix.
He picks up the crucifix, then it bursts into flame.
Excuse me. Then it bursts into flame.
Yeah.
He punches the French general in the face.
With a flaming crucifix.
Then he stabs him, so he's going to die. you know, spins around. He's holding the French general over the ledge now, who then says, all I wanted was a little order. A slice of quiche would be nice.
Yeah.
So he makes a little French joke there.
Oh, that's a great French
joke. I'm only invading Germany just to bring some order. Then he falls off the ledge, knocking over a big rock, which triggers the catapult, which Jake is sitting in, firing Jake up
into the tower.
That scene stayed with me.
It was quite remarkable, wasn't it?
I've got a biography of the Brothers Grimm, and I haven't spotted that part of their life.
I don't think... Is that autobiographical? That may have happened.
We can't be sure that didn't happen.
Yeah, that's true.
Wow. So did you enjoy it? The Brothers Grimm movie.
It was interesting to start with. I think by the end, it felt like I'd been repeatedly bashed around the head. Nothing made sense anymore. I was just going with it at that point. Like, sure, yeah, of course that would happen, yeah. Follow the toad. Trees running around, CGI horse belly. Just go with it.
It was jam-packed with famous actors.
It really was.
And a really famous director. It's a really weird little film that seems to slip through the cracks of time. Like, I'd never heard of it. And I'm very glad we watched it.
Me too. Absolute peach.
You mentioned the writer there. What was the writer thinking? Mm-hmm. So I actually looked up who the writer is of the Brothers Grimm movie. He's a chap called Erin Kruger. And some of his other work includes he's written several films from the Transformers film franchise.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he's a big player. I couldn't get this goldfish thing out of my head. I was just like, slip of the goldfish. So I've actually got a piece of parchment here that I found Erin's agent office in Hollywood.
No.
And I got their address. And I've got a little letter here that I've been scrawling. When we've done this, we're going to go up to your highest turret and send it on by pigeon over
Absolutely.
To Erin.
Yeah,
so I just want to run my letter past you before we do that, though.
Please do.
So I've written, Dear Erin, congratulations on a successful career in the movie business.
Yep.
I'm contacting you from a Brothers Grimm podcast. For Christmas, my podcast co-host gifted me a DVD of your movie, The Brothers Grimm, and we thoroughly enjoyed it. However, I was struck by a throwaway line delivered by Matt Damon's Will during the second act. Referring to the heroine, he says, I'd slip her the goldfish. Now, I'm British, and I'm not familiar with this expression, and can find no evidence of its existence outside of your creation. I'm genuinely intrigued as to the inception of this line. Perhaps you overheard it on a trip to merry old England one time. If you have the time, please do let me know. Sincerely, Matthew.
I think that letter's perfect.
You happy for me to send that?
Let's pop that in the post. Pop that in the pigeon.
Let's pop that in the pigeon.
Great. That's great.
Hopefully we'll get a response.
I can't wait.
What have we got? What's coming up next week? We're going to aim to have it out next week because this was just a little extra episode. We want to get back on track.
We do.
And firing through those stories.
We do. Yeah.
Episodes.
So
Hopefully next week. What will be coming
We out? Will be reading The Wishing Table... The Gold Ass and the Cudgel in the Sack.
You love saying that.
I love saying that. I'm going to take every opportunity to say that.
Fantastic.
Well, I can't wait to hear that.
I've enjoyed this episode.
It's been great. Thank you again so much for all your wonderful messages.
Thanks again to Pook Press. I'd highly recommend signing up to their newsletter. We've been signed up for a long time now.
Oh, it's great, isn't it?
I don't know if it's fortnightly. They send a newsletter which always features a fairy tale or a folk story.
Yeah.
That's just for free. A lovely little one drops into your inbox. Thank you again. Thanks, everyone. Cheers.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. So, there you have it. Thank you to everyone who entered the competition and congratulations to Dawn. We'll see you next time in The Wishing Cloth, The Gold Ass, and The Cudgel in the Sack. The Strange Feast was taken from the original folk and fairy tales of the Brothers Grimm by Jack Sipes. Read with permission from Princeton University Press.